The U.S. and the European Union strike a major deal on energy supplies. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. In just the last hour, President Joe Biden and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen announced the creation of a joint task force aimed at reducing Europe's dependence on Russian energy imports. The EU has already said it will cut Russian gas use by two-thirds this year in response to Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. And thanks to today's announcement, starting this year, America has committed to providing more liquefied natural gas to the continent. Last year, its supplies accounted for 28% of the bloc's LNG imports, while Russia, by comparison, supplied about 20%. Speaking at the podium just moments ago, President Biden said stronger cooperation between Western allies will bolster national security, but it will not run counter to climate goals.
The European Commission is going to work with the member states to store gas across the continent, to build more infrastructure to receive LNG, and to take steps to increase the efficiency of gas. This build-out will occur in a way that is consistent with, not in conflict with, the net zero climate goal that we're shooting for. It's going to take some time to adjust gas supply chains and infrastructure that is built for the last decade. So we're going to have to make sure that families in Europe can get through this winter and the next while we're building an infrastructure for a diversified, resilient, and clean energy future.
Well, clearly the environment is top of mind for wider EU-US cooperation, but it's a goal that's been put on hold for now in Poland as the Eastern European country looks for alternative sources of natural gas supplies there. Construction has started on a $2.7 billion pipeline project that will carry gas into the country from Norway. The BBC's Adrienne Murray has that story from a construction site in Denmark.
Close to the small town of Middelfart, construction workers are racing to complete the final stretches of a pipeline that cuts across the Danish countryside.
In a matter of months, Norwegian gas will be flowing through this pipeline. It's a key part of Poland's strategy to end its reliance on Russian gas.
Work here was suspended last May over concerns about wildlife. But just this month, it got the green light again. Danish grid operator Enginet says the construction is still on track. Torben Brabo is senior vice president.
So Baltic Pipe is a missing link in the gas sector in Europe. We have a lot of highways bringing lots of gas from west to east, from east to west, etc. And Baltic Pipe delivers 2.5% of the annual gas consumption in Europe.
Gas will be piped from the North Sea, 900 kilometres through Denmark to Poland. Plans for the huge project have been long in the making, and today is a critical part of Poland's strategy to bolster its energy security. As the country's Prime Minister, Mateusz Morawiecki, stressed during his recent visit to Oslo.
Towards the end of this year, October, November, the Baltic Pipe is going to be ready, and then we will have 10 billion cubic meters of Norwegian gas. And today we know very, very well that we have to be independent of Russian oil and gas.
Historically, Poland has been tied to Russia for the bulk of its natural gas. But a contract with Gazprom soon expires and Warsaw won't renew it. Instead, it's looking to Norway and a new link with Lithuania. As countries race to secure energy supplies, the Baltic Pipe will soon add a new artery to the region's energy network.
That's the BBC's Adrienne Murray reporting from Denmark there. Well, another significant development from the EU today, after more than a year of negotiations, language has been finalized for a landmark piece of legislation aimed at reining in the market dominance of technology giants like Google and Apple. The BBC's James Clayton has details on the Digital Markets Act.
This is the biggest regulatory move against big tech, not just in the EU, but perhaps ever. Many EU leaders believe that some tech companies have got too big and that a lack of competition is bad for consumers. Apple will have to open up its App Store to competitors. Google won't be able to preload its search engine on Android phones. And those measures are just the tip of the iceberg. The EU's antitrust chief, Margaret Vestager, said the gatekeepers now have to take responsibility. But this law reads like a menu of policies that big tech have been fighting for years, and they're now considering their response. Apple said it was concerned the rules would create unnecessary privacy and security vulnerabilities.
That's the BBC's James Clayton reporting there. Checking the numbers now, Asia and European stock benchmarks are little changed in today's sessions. Russia stocks, though, have dropped in their second day of trading after a record month-long suspension. The MOEX index is down more than 4%, wiping out yesterday's gains. The commodities market has been hard hit by the Russia-Ukraine conflict, especially base metals. Earlier this month, extreme volatility in the price of nickel on the London Metal Exchange led to a six-day trading suspension. Since then, the exchange has increased trading limits to 15% swings, either up or down, but it hasn't led to smoother trading. Over the last 2 days, trading started, then stopped when prices surged by 15%. Today, nickel is up 9% so far. Colin Hamilton, Managing Director of Commodities Research at BMO Capital Markets, explains what is leading to such volatile price swings.
It is one of the smaller LME contracts, and we had some very extreme positioning in that market, and it's taken a while to try and bring that back towards normality.
You're talking about short selling there, right? That's when an investor bets that the price of something will fall. So how much of a factor is that in the volatility that we're seeing?
Yes, we had a very heavy short position, and it wasn't actually an investor, it was a producer. Now, producers can naturally hedge their positions, but in this case, we had the largest nickel producer in the world had an outsized short position. And for nickel in the LME contract, you have to get physical material to deliver against your position on expiry. They did not have the material available to do that. There has actually been a real scramble for physical material because market participants are expecting there will be a disruption to trade flows from Russia.
At what point does all of this settle out? Is it just confidence that investors and producers will be able to get the physical supply of nickel? Is that really what will bring confidence back?
I think that is part of it. It may be that the London Metal Exchange has to broaden the type of nickel that is allowed to be delivered against this contract, because actually what you can physically deliver is only the real high purity nickel. And if we think of that as a proportion of the nickel made in the world, that's only about 40%. So we may have to see the London Metal Exchange rules change to give people confidence.
Is this volatility and concern spreading to other commodity markets?
There is certainly, I would say the knock-on impact here is, of course, when we see volatility in one contract, well, people look at others. And we have got, of course, a situation where we've got very high commodity prices at the moment, and ones which have moved quite a lot post the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It comes to a situation where some of the brokerages and some of the trading firms have to actually post collateral against their positions. Now, that puts a lot of pressure on treasury systems and the banks that are funding them. So I think those are worries about the tail risk from a knock-on impact of perhaps banks pulling out from the sector. In terms of the other metals, they are bigger often than nickel, and also there is more of the material that can be delivered. So I don't expect to see the same sort of volatility. I think nickel is a unique situation. But when you have a period of high commodity prices, plus you have some of the trade flow disruptions we're seeing, yes, there can be these second order effects that just cause some concern and cause some risk managers to be biting their nails.
Colin Hamilton from BMO Capital Markets, thanks for breaking this down for us.
Thank you.
And finally, there's talk North Korea could face even heavier sanctions after firing what analysts are calling a monster missile. It successfully launched its largest intercontinental ballistic missile, or ICBM, in a test on Thursday. In recent years, China and Russia have often pushed the United Nations to lift international sanctions on North Korea for humanitarian reasons. Now there are growing concerns geopolitical tensions could worsen further if the three countries get closer. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.